fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, a wonderful Wednesday to you. I'm so glad you're with me for this hour of the Cale Clark Show. Let me give out the phone number right now. I've got so much to talk about. We're going to talk about Mary, miracles, motives of credibility for the Catholic faith, and much, much more. 888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call, sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. 888-914-9149. Friendly operators are standing by to take your call and connect you to me for free. Patrick Alog is actually ready to take your call. He is raring to go. He's got an itchy trigger finger. He's got his hand just over, hovering over the phone. He wants to pick it up. So call right now, 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, become a shadow producer, give me a show idea, a link, something that you think might be of interest to our listeners. You can email me at this address, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. You can also find me on the X app at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And you know what I've been thinking about a lot during this Easter season is that there's so much evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ, so much historical evidence. And this is something that both Protestants and Catholics can certainly agree upon. And especially on the Faith Explained program, we did a series called Easter Evidence, and we looked through all the best historical arguments for the resurrection of Jesus. And you've listened to those shows, no doubt. You can find them on the Relevant Radio app archived for you to share. And whenever I think about evidence for the resurrection, I often think about evidence for Marian miracles in Catholic history. And I always try to ask my evangelical friends, my Protestant friends, I love them so dearly, and I want them to experience the fullness of the Catholic faith. This is what Jesus has for them. All these gifts that he wants them to share, and especially the Eucharist. And sometimes I'll ask them, hey, why don't you apply some of the reasoning that you would use, some of the historical analysis that you would use to look at things like Easter, events like Easter, and say, yeah, this really happened. Why not take a look at the Marian miracles of the church? Because, of course, they're so well known. And think about Guadalupe. Think about some of the big ticket approved Marian apparitions, Lourdes, Fatima. And so I actually did that today. I texted a friend of mine, an evangelical friend of mine, who's a really, really smart guy, really good friend. I said, hey, what do you think about this topic? I'm going to talk about this on the show tonight, I think. Give me your quick take off the top of your head on some of the most famous Marian miracles, like the ones I just mentioned. Do you think that they're convincing? Do Protestants that you know find them convincing? Have they even considered them? And so my friend got back to me and he said, well, some of them might be real. He texted me. I'm just reading his text to you. But that doesn't mean it's Mary. Some of them might be real, but it doesn't mean that it's Mary. Could be demons. Could be witchcraft, he said. Okay, well, that's a response. And that's an option that certainly has to be looked at, I think. Are these from God? We'll get into that question. We'll get into that question here on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. I think especially with the question of some of the more dubious alleged Marian apparitions, some of the non-approved apparitions, that some of that stuff might be going on. It might not be from God. That's an open question. But I want to focus specifically on the ones that have been approved by the church, especially these three big-ticket items, as I said, Guadalupe in the 16th century, Lourdes in Fatima. But I really do think there are some incredible motives of credibility found for Catholicism in particular in these Marian miracles. By the way, something else that's kind of fun that we're going to talk about is with reference to one of these, Lourdes, Our Lady of Lourdes. I just found out today, I was today years old when I realized that there is a connection between Ferrero Rocher chocolates and Our Lady of Lourdes. Now that's the Easter season, it's okay to talk about chocolate. We can imbibe responsibly a little bit in Easter joy. That story is coming up later, so stay tuned for that. This is a real sweet truth, if you will. Talk about a sweet tooth. I've got one of those as well. Well, this is a sweet truth, and it kind of blew my mind. But let's get back to the question at hand. This idea of miracles, Marian miracles in particular, are they good evidence for the truth of Catholicism? And why don't many non-Catholics really consider these. And maybe some of them have, and maybe they've said, I don't buy it for these reasons. And you can maybe share with me what some of your non-Catholic friends have said about this stuff. 888-914-9149. I read a really interesting piece on this, really, really good article on this, actually, by my friend Trent Horn. Trent Horn's a great, great I think he's the best young Catholic apologist in America. I think he's just absolutely on point. Love his stuff. Love his writing. He's also a super nice guy. Prince of a dude. I've met him in person, and I really have all the time in the world for Trent. He wrote a piece recently about this very topic, and he actually said, it's kind of a provocative title, "When Miracles Make Protestants Act Like Atheists." That's kind of interesting. What does he mean by that? Well, he starts off by talking about St. Thomas Aquinas, and that in St. Thomas Aquinas's famous, well, of course, we know the Summa Theologiae, we know that, but what about the Summa Contra Gentiles, you know, the Summa against the pagans, essentially? He talks about this issue of miracles, and Aquinas says that during biblical times, miracles were more common, they were more prolific, if you will, because of the fact that, hey, God needs to establish it's really me acting in human history here. So there's got to be a preponderance of miracles. And I do think that's true in the general sense, for sure, in salvation history. I tend to think that when it comes to key moments in salvation history, there are often a lot of miracles associated with those key moments, key movements of God. One would be the Exodus, of course. That's a great point to talk about. We did the Exodus series, another series that I did on the Faith Explained, went through the book of Exodus in great detail. I loved it. It was so much fun. But think about the plagues that God sent on the Egyptians to get his people out. So Pharaoh would eventually let his people go. Think about everything that was wrought through Moses by God, the commandments, the parting of the Red Sea. So all of these miracles happen at this key moment of the Exodus. And of course, there's the new Exodus that Jesus Christ brings about in the New Covenant time. And there are many miracles associated as well with him, with his incarnation, with his ministry, with his life, his death, his resurrection. And again, this is, you can't deny, this is another key moment in salvation history. And I think this also kind of extends past the biblical time period, though. Let's look at, for example, Our Lady of Guadalupe. This is, I think the timing of this is more than a little interesting, because Our Lady of Guadalupe appears when? In the 16th century, in the New World, when the Old World is being torn apart, religiously speaking, through the Protestant Revolution, through Luther and those who followed him, what's going on in the New World? Well, Mary appears in a place where missionaries were utterly rejected for many, many reasons, too, prior to this, of course, in the year 1531. Mary appears to Juan Diego, this peasant, leaves him this miraculous image imprinted on his tilma, and of course this image still exists. Scientists have studied it, very similar to the Shroud of Turin, by the way. It's been examined by scientists. They can't figure out any natural explanation for the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And of course, this is amazing too. I've told you this story before. When I was on my honeymoon in Rome, we took kind of a side trip to Assisi, ran into this American priest, who I've lost touch with. His name was Padre Cisco, really cool guy. Just met him happenstance. He was leading a small tour group, some family members through Assisi, and we got chatting. He said, "Hey, you want to join our tour?" I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." So he gave us a great tour of Assisi, but then he happened to mention in the context of conversation that when he was doing his PhD, he did it on this topic. It was sermons that were preached by Catholic bishops, priests, deacons, sermons preached in what is now Mexico, right after this appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe and the tilma. And during this period, when 8 to 10 million people converted to Catholicism in just a few years, it's the greatest evangelistic outburst that's ever been seen on the history of the planet. That's a dissertation I'd like to read about these homilies. And I don't think it was the eloquence of the preachers that convinced people, but it was, of course, Our Lady of Guadalupe and this incredible apparition. And we've talked about that a lot on the program, and we will again. But I think that's another key moment in history, again, when God was kind of acting. And so this is a really, really good topic to talk about. And a lot of Protestants, and Trent Horn talks about this, that when Protestantism got going, there were some people who kind of doubted. And they said, we kind of want to go with this movement that Luther has started, but what about all the miracles? We can't discount all the miracles that have happened throughout Catholic history, especially through the saints, intercession of the saints, miracles done through the hands of saints. How can we just kind of throw this away? Well, they would kind of respond, at least many Protestants did. They would say, well, these miracles weren't really miracles at all. These were frauds, perhaps. Perhaps they were false miracles, counterfeit miracles produced by demons. And St. Paul does warn about this in the New Testament, that there can be counterfeit miracles, for sure. And so they sort of said, no real miracles happened after the apostolic age. That was it. So don't expect any more. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Mary, miracles, motives of Catholic credibility. Let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Christina in Miami. Hi, Christina.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you. So the only thing I mentioned was that if you see the movie of Saint Bernadette, mm-hmm. of Our Lady of Lourdes, the black and white version, which anybody can see for free on YouTube. well, I'm just shouting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
At the very beginning of the movie, there's a quote, which I would like to paraphrase because I didn't memorize it, but it says, "For those who believe, they have faith, but those who don't believe, just will never believe."
Hmm.
It's that to me, and throughout the movie, you see how she gets persecuted and questioned by the local officials. So you could talk on and on about different things. I mean, I have a friend who has a Protestant background as well.
Uh-huh.
And she actually was Catholic, and she became kind of Protestant. And I got frustrated trying to convince her or trying to understand her point of view. It's very difficult, I think, to make someone believe when they don't want to believe. And they don't want to see it, and they don't. It's not that they don't care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the human pride, and human opinion gets in the way. We just kind of get caught up in our own opinions and ego pride is the word, pride. That we can
no
argue.
Question.
People can argue anything, you know. And I'm going to take this young lady as an example. I believe that God, in His infinite wisdom, is when we pass away, each person is judged individually only by what they know, what they believe. And if you deny, you know, mm-hmm. it's biblical. But basically, I think that to be so daring and to say, God cannot do this, or this is not from God. Yeah. Who are you to say that?
Okay, that's Christina, let me just jump in there because you made a lot of really, really good points here. First thing you mentioned, of course, was the Song of Bernadette, and producer Jim was chiding me yesterday. I still haven't seen the Song of Bernadette. He's like, you've got to see that movie, Cale. And I know, I got to get around to that at some point. But, and of course, the quote that you mentioned, Christina, "For those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who do not, no explanation is possible." That is very much tied into what we're talking about here. There's no question about that. And this is one of the things that Trent Horn said, is that sometimes some Christians who do believe, and Protestant Christians he's talking about, who do believe in Christ, who do believe in the possibility of miracles, of course, they have to be a Christian, especially the resurrection. When it comes to these Catholic miracles, they look at them and say, yeah, they kind of almost become atheists, as he puts it, because, no, that's not possible. Why? Well, because it's Catholic, so it's obviously impossible. that's not a good way to look at it. You have to look at the evidence. And Christina, you kind of mentioned that as well. We do need to be open-minded about these things. And one of the things that we'll maybe touch on briefly, too, is that there are miracle claims that come from other religious traditions as well. Not just within Protestant Christianity, but also other religions. Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit as well as we go on. And then just the last thing you said I want to touch on really briefly is this idea that when we die, when we face our individual particular judgment, we're judged according to the truth that we knew. I think that's true. We're not judged according to what we didn't know or that we weren't taught or that we didn't quite understand, so we didn't quite believe it. We're going to be judged on the truth that we do know, and we all know some truth. There's no question about it. St. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 1. Just looking at creation, you should know that there's a God. Okay, you're going to be judged on how you responded to that truth. Some have more truth than others. We're given more, especially when we're more open to the truth. I think God will certainly use those openings for sure. But did you respond to the truth that you knew about Jesus Christ? How much did you fully understand about the Catholic Church? Or maybe you're dealing with a situation of invincible ignorance. You honestly didn't know. You didn't understand. Nobody ever taught you about it. Or maybe you had some misconceptions about it. That's well possible, especially in our world. But great call, Christina. You raised a lot of really interesting questions. We got to take a quick break right now on the show. But if you want to call in, do so right now. 888-914-9149. I see you there, Olga. We'll get your call soon. 888-914-9149. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show.
Facts and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. We're talking about Mary, miracles, and motives of credibility. Why is it that sometimes our evangelical friends, our Protestant Christian friends, they reject the Marian miracles in the Catholic tradition throughout history? But yet, they do accept that miracles are possible. They accept miracles like the resurrection of Jesus. That's an interesting question that's always intrigued me, because I think that Mary, of course, will bring all Christians to her son. That's what it's all about. That's what she says in John chapter 2. Of course, do whatever he tells you. This is what Mary strives to do, get us in contact with her divine son and get us obeying his will. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. All right, let's go to Mary Beth in Lake Forest, Illinois. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hey, Cal. So I was listening to your last caller about her friend and for those who believe with the Song of Bernadette, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then those that don't. And I was just telling the guy that answers your phone all about Roy Showman. He was a devout Jew growing up, and then he was a hardcore atheist, MIT, Harvard grad. And then he met Jesus unknowingly. He didn't know who it was. And he said, I will become your follower as long as you're not Jesus. And he prayed and prayed and prayed. Yeah. And then a year later to the day, Mary came to him. And he dropped to his knees. And right there and then, he knew that that was Jesus that had come to him. And he went to the Protestant churches for answers. And he said Mary was the most divine being. And they did not honor Mary the way he believed that she deserved. And it wasn't until he got to the Catholic Church mm-hmm. that it started to make sense. And so I love to show that story of his. He's all over YouTube. He's got his own channel. For people that are either atheists or don't believe, I mean, and that guy is smart. He can answer any single question. He can put all of it together. And, you know, he's even called out theologians on stuff. And he's like, remember the Council of Trent? And they're like, oh, yeah. You know, he's awesome.
Yeah, no, I love Roy Showman. I'll tell you what, I should get him on the show one day. I've never had Roy on the show, but very well said, Mary Beth. He hit on all the major important points about Roy. He studied under some of the leading rabbis in the United States, total brainiac, Harvard Business School, MIT, you name it. He's been there. And yeah, God got a hold of him in a very dramatic way, and he talks about this in his books. He's got a couple of books. Maybe he's published more. I don't know of any others than the two that I know of, which is Salvation is from the Jews, which was his first book, and it talks about the role of the Jews all the way from the time of Abraham to the second coming of Christ. And that's actually, of course, a quote from Jesus to the Samaritan woman. You know, you basically told her, you guys don't know what you're talking about, but we do, because salvation is from the Jews. And of course, Jesus himself being Jewish, as were all the apostles, Our Lady. So there's a huge connection there. And he talks about how when you come from a Jewish background and you walk into a Catholic parish, you get it right away. There's so many allusions to the Old Testament. There's the tabernacle. There's the altar of sacrifice, like the ambo, something from the synagogue, the word of God being proclaimed. Yes, I get it right away. And most Catholics don't, you know, if you're not exposed to that growing up. So that's super intriguing. So he wrote about that. That's an amazing book. And then there's another book called Honey from the Rock, which is a story of 12 converts from Judaism to Catholicism. But they wouldn't see themselves as being converts. They'd see themselves as, okay, this is Judaism with the Messiah having come. This is Judaism with the Messiah now in play, and that Messiah is Jesus. Really awesome books. And actually, with respect to these Marian miracles, his own life, Roy Shulman, was touched by one of them, which was Fatima. And I've heard him give this talk where he talked about just going into a friend's house, and he was going to hang out with this dude, and the guy was getting ready, and he was just kind of sitting in his living room waiting for him. And on the coffee table, there was this book about Fatima. And he starts looking at it, and he's like, I've never heard of this before. And the miracle of the sun, that took place where 80,000 people, approximately 80 to 100,000 people, witnessed it live. And this was covered, of course, by newspapers in Portugal and in Europe. This is unbelievable. October the 13th, 1917, of course, the sun began to kind of spin in the sky, zigzag. It looked like it was going to crash into Earth, this kaleidoscope of colors. And again, between somewhere between 80 and 100,000 people saw this. It had been pouring rain. It was kind of a mud fest. It was like Woodstock or something there. And then everybody was completely bone dry when this happened. And so this was an actual miracle that was witnessed live and in full effect by a lot of different people. This was not a hallucination, because a hallucination can't be shared with someone else. There's no clinical research that's ever been done on such a thing. It simply doesn't exist, because people have tried. They've asked. This is also a common comeback to people who say, well, Jesus, you know, when you say Jesus was risen physically from the dead, they'll say, no, the apostles were hallucinating. And as we showed on our Faith Explained series on Easter evidence, that just doesn't work. You can't share a hallucination. Clinically speaking, it can't be done. It's an interior individual experience. If you think you're seeing Barney the dinosaur, it's probably only you. You're probably sleep deprived. You might be on something. This is what's going on here. And so you can't share a hallucination. Certainly these 100,000 people didn't. And so Roy Shulman sees this on the coffee table in this book and says, how come nobody ever told me about this before? And it really got him thinking. But anyways, read his testimony. It's pretty powerful. And thanks for bringing that up as well, Mary Beth. And Roy has been on Relevant Radio many times, but he hasn't been on this show yet. So we got to make that happen. We got to make that happen, guys. All right, let's go to Olga in Southern California. Hello, Olga.
Hi, Kale. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to bring a point to, like, your friend, your Protestant friend, that can you present evidence where a demon created? I mean, made a miracle that was positive or healthy, you know, like, is there something documented?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good question, because some people want to say, and I'm not saying that my friend has made a decision either way, what he thinks about these Marian apparitions and Marian miracles, but he did say, like, one potential explanation for these things, maybe they're not from God. And I sort of shared with the audience, if you're just tuning in, a text message I received from an evangelical friend who said that, you know, this could be witchcraft, some of these Marian apparitions, they might be from the dark side. Let's talk about that a little bit, because Olga, you bring up a really, really good point. Why would a demon point you towards what's positive and healthy? That's an excellent question. And so let's talk about that a little bit. One of the things that Trent Horn mentioned in his article about this is the work of scholar Mike Lycona. Michael Iacona is a Protestant. I do highly respect his work. He worked with one of my former professors, Dr. Gary Habermas, who's the leading expert in the world on the resurrection. Iacona's also written a lot on the resurrection. And it is possible, there's no question that it's possible that miracles, quote unquote, that happen in various religious traditions are not from God. They could be false miracles. He suggests that this might be behind some of the Marian miracles and apparitions, possibly. Here's the thing. I think Olga kind of nailed the basic point here, because even during the ministry of Christ himself, he was thought to be working miracles through Beelzebub, right? Through the prince of demons, the lord of the flies, the lord of the high places, the prince of demons. In Luke chapter 11, that's one place you can look it up. Also, it's in Mark. His opponents, Jesus' opponents, say that, oh yeah, you're casting out demons, but you're casting out demons by the power of the prince of demons. This makes absolutely no sense. Why would Satan bust up his own kingdom? Let's put it that way. Why would Satan destroy his own kingdom? Let's kick out my own demons here. What does that prove? Jesus says every kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and a divided house falls. And that's, by the way, where Abraham Lincoln got that famous line during the Civil War era, a house divided will not stand. If Satan is also divided against himself, how will his kingdom stand? You know, he has come to an end, as Jesus puts it in Mark's gospel. So this is really intriguing. In Luke's gospel, Jesus says, by the finger of God, I cast out demons. And this is exactly the same term that's used in the Exodus, that, you know, when these Egyptian magicians who are obviously using dark magical arts, they are able to replicate some of the miracles done through Moses, but there's just one they can't copy. And they say to Pharaoh, man, we've tried, but this is the finger of God. We can't copy this. So Jesus is saying, if I cast out demons by the finger of God, then the kingdom of God has come to you. The kingdom of Satan is coming to an end. And here's the proof. I'm busting up his kingdom. I'm casting out the demons. I'm freeing the hostages. I'm God's commando. I'm tying up the bad guys and setting the people free. So this is exactly what's going on here. And I think that this is an important point about any miracle claim, especially in the Christian tradition. And Trent puts it well, and I'm gonna quote him here. He says, quote, if this explanation works for Jesus, then it works for Catholic miracles, especially Marian apparitions. When it comes to approved Marian apparitions like Fatima, one can ask, why would the devil impersonate Mary to move people to join a church whose members promise in their baptismal vows to renounce Satan and all his empty works and all his empty show? End of quote. It doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah, why would Satan do this? The answer is he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. He's not going to try to move you closer to God, but clearly, if you get in touch with Mary, she is going to move you closer to God. That's what she does. So this is a really, really important point that you bring up. And I really appreciate that, Olga. And there's actually one more little aspect of this, too, that I got to point out. And I have been guilty of this as well in the past. Trent talks about this too, and I think he makes a really, really good point. Sometimes Catholics can be, it's just sometimes Protestants can be dismissive of Catholic miracles. Say, well, it's got to be demonic, you know, it can't be from God. Well, sometimes Catholics and other people are guilty of dismissing miracle claims from the Protestant world. And I've certainly done that as well in my life. And I've been guilty of that. At the end of the day, no matter where the alleged miracle comes from, you have to look at the evidence. You have to look at the case. Is this really a supernatural event that occurred through the power of God? So God's hands are not tied. God could work through Protestants. He can actually work through anybody. Again, a great example in the gospel itself, because do you remember these other exorcists that were running around casting demons out of people in Jesus' name? And one place you can find this is in Luke chapter 9. And Jesus' disciples complain about it. John says to Jesus, "Hey, Master, we saw a man casting out demons in your name, and we forbade him because he doesn't follow with us." He's not part of our group. He's not in the legitimate apostolic tribe here. And what did Jesus say? "No, we better shut this guy down." No, he said, "Do not forbid him, for he that is not against you is for you." So they didn't quite have the full picture of who Jesus was and what his movement, the church, was all about. But God still granted these guys the ability to exorcise demons in the name of Jesus. So Trent kind of speculates that God could allow Protestants to work miracles that verify sort of the common truths of the faith that both Catholics and Protestants would believe. Remember, we talked about C.S. Lewis the other day. This is exactly what his book, Mere Christianity, is all about. What are sort of the bare bones things that all Christians can agree upon? Now, again, how do you know how long the list should be? How many items are on that list? Let's leave that discussion for another day. But a miracle might be done to prove something that all Christians would believe. For example, that Jesus is divine. Or something else that is a sort of a common core belief of all Christians. So that, yeah, God could certainly allow that to happen. God could certainly allow that to happen in the non-Catholic Christian world. So this we have to be kind of open to that. And there's a guy, and Trent mentions him as well, and this guy is an amazing scholar, Craig Keener. Craig Keener. He's a Protestant scholar who has written this huge, huge work on miracles. And he talks about verified miracles in the Protestant world that are absolutely legit from a historical point of view. There's no real reason to deny that these things happened. Miraculous events, sometimes it's through pastors, sometimes it's through ordinary lay Christians. And these things do happen around the world. But I think Trent's right that if they are real miracles, they'll sort of verify things that all Christians would believe. But what's also something you have to take into effect, though, and he says this is a really good point. Protestants, then, they have to look at some of the other miracles that God has done. If we say, okay, God has done some miracles through the hands of Protestants. Okay, if we accept that, you guys need to look at some of the specific miracles that involve Catholicism in particular. For example, Eucharistic miracles like Lanciano. Why is that? Why did this happen? Because this is drawing somebody not just to Christianity in general, but to Catholicism in particular, to the Eucharist, to the reality of the Eucharist. Same thing with the Marian apparitions. If you look at the evidence and say, why would God allow this to happen? Because it's drawing people, it would only draw people to Catholicism. Well, that's kind of the point. If it is a legit miracle in a Catholic context, specifically a Marian context or a Eucharistic context, that certainly would indicate that, yeah, the church that God wants people to be in is the Catholic Church. So that's also a really, really good point in this whole discussion. I wonder what you think. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. All right, let's go to Miguel in Tampa. Hello, Miguel.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to comment what you mentioned about Mexico. I lived in Mexico.
Okay.
And, well, there's a lot of lies being told since Guadalupe, especially by the Protestant churches. There's nothing that the Spanish did, actually, because it was Moctezuma himself who ordered the end of human sacrifices. You've discussed that in many programs yourself. The problem was that when the new kingdom was established, the Aztecs were not the rulers. It was a coalition of the Central American kingdoms. And each, well, it's the same politics as everywhere else, every time, every country, every epoch. Different groups want to get the power. Conversions were in the hundreds of thousands before the Virgin. Because many of the Aztec lords converted before the Virgin, and they ordered their individual fiefs to convert. But there was a lot of disunity between the Tlaxcala, Mexico, Jalapa, Chimpal, the different Indian kingdoms, and the Spanish. So Mother Mary came and united everyone under her mantle. It's not that the Spanish did this or that, or that anyone did this or that. She was the unifying factor for the Christian Mexico and the rest of the hemisphere.
Well, Miguel, thanks for calling in. And I will confess that I am not an expert on the history of 15th, 16th century, what is now Mexico, prior to the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe. You're alleging that there were hundreds of thousands of conversions before to Catholicism, before Our Lady appeared. That's something I'd have to do some reading up on to verify. Maybe other scholars of the period are listening to. You can call in as well, 888-914-9149. Everything that I've read has, I'm not an expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, but I did read a book that was written by the postulator of the cause for canonization for Juan Diego. And reading this book seems to indicate that the missionaries, the Franciscan missionaries, were kind of hitting their heads up against a brick wall in terms of conversions for many, many reasons, which we can maybe get into in another episode because it's probably too much for today. But that's intriguing. And certainly the divided political scene, that's more than likely to be historical that you mentioned there. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate that. All right, you're listening to the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Got to take a quick break right now, but we will be back with more, and you can call in once again, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the program, 888-914-9149. Great time to call in. We're going to try to get your calls in just a couple of minutes. 888-914-9149. Hey, do you like what you're hearing here on the Cale Clark Show and on Relevant Radio in general? You can support our mission by becoming a parish ambassador. With support from Relevant Radio, you can share information about our shows, promotional opportunities, our free mobile app, and much, much more. Only takes about an hour a month. So you can sign up to be a parish ambassador now at relevantradio.com/ambassador. That's relevantradio.com/ambassador. Well, St. Paul says, hey, we've got to be ambassadors of Christ. Christ is making his appeal through us. Oh, that's a big responsibility, but we're up to the task because Christ has gifted us with everything we need, the power of the Holy Spirit. And of course, we're coming up to Pentecost time, and you too can have this mission as a parish ambassador. I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, as I told you off the top, we've been talking about Mary, miracles, motives of Catholic credibility. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about St. Bernadette of Lourdes, of course, because yesterday, the 16th of April, was the day that she passed into eternity. And Our Lady promised that she would be happy in the afterlife. And it had a lot of suffering on earth. There's no question about that. Here's another interesting factoid about Lourdes that I did not know until today. And I couldn't believe this. we were just eating some of these the other day. My daughter, Michaela, loves these Ferrero Rocher chocolates. I had no idea about the connection between this chocolate company and Our Lady of Lourdes. Francesca Fenton, writing for the National Catholic Register, talked about this. The guy who founded the Ferrero Rocher Chocolate Company was a guy named Michel. And of course, a lot of guys in France are named Michel. It's simply Michael in French. Michel Ferrero, who founded the company, he was a very, very devout Catholic, prayed an awful lot, super devoted to Our Lady of Lourdes. He really wanted to honor her through his work because he felt that God had really blessed his business. And apparently he named this company Rocher. Obviously Ferrero comes from his last name, Ferrero, Michel Ferrero. Rocher means rock in French. So I guess Peter the Rocher, if you will, the first pope, our own Father Rocky. So you can call in tonight on the Family Rosary Across America and say, hi, I'd like to talk to Father Rocher. He'd be like, what? All right, anyways, Father knows a lot of languages. I think he knows French too, a little bit of French. Un petit peu, a little bit. But the rock grotto at Lourdes was called Le Rocher de Massabielle. Le Rocher de Massabielle, the rock formation there. And that's exactly where Mary appeared to St. Bernadette. So some people even say, and I don't know if Michel Ferrero actually verified this or not, that when you look at one of the Ferrero Rocher chocolates, you kind of, unpackage that golden foil, and there's a little kind of a cupcake thing on the bottom. It's got this crunchy coating. It's got some hazelnuts in there. It looks a little kind of uneven. It looks like a rock formation. Was that on purpose? Maybe he sort of modeled that after this rock formation at Lourdes. And this is what he said. On the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Ferrero Rocher Chocolate Company, he said, "The success of Ferrero we owe to Our Lady of Lourdes. Without her, we can do little." Wow, how about that? So he died, by the way, on Valentine's Day in 2015. He was 89 years old. And he used to make annual pilgrimages to Lourdes. He used to make it so that his employees could go to Lourdes on a pilgrimage. And in each one of his company's 14 production facilities, factories around the world, he had a statue put up of Our Lady of Lourdes. How about that? I didn't know this, but the Ferrero Rocher company is actually pretty huge. It's the third largest chocolate producer in the world, and it actually also owns Nutella, Tic Tac. Hey, I use a lot of Tic Tacs, Got a fresh breath, right? But it's hard to sneak around when you've got Tic Tacs in your pocket because they're always so noisy anyways. Very, very cool. I did not know that. And from chocolates to bananas, did you know that? Well, you can have a chocolate banana sundae, a banana split or something like that. Today is also National Banana Day, Jim. Did you know that? Jim?
Yeah.
He was shocked by that. He couldn't say anything.
I was eating lots of chocolate.
He was stuffing a Ferrero Rocher. But I know you also had a banana today, so you told me that you had one at lunchtime. So
good stuff.
Yeah, I just really, really quickly, this is amazing. It's National Banana Day, and I just had to mention this because did you know that missionaries were responsible for bringing bananas into the New World in a certain sense? The history of the banana is actually pretty interesting, and you guys can give me your favorite banana joke if you want. They originated in Southeast Asia, in India specifically, and actually kind of made their way westward through Arab conquerors in 327 BC. I learned this on daysoftheyear.com on that website. They got to Europe, and European missionaries brought bananas to the Caribbean. And that's how they kind of got into that region, became a lucrative crop eventually, got super popular in the West, especially in the 1800s and 1900s. And they were kind of really pricey at the time. They were considered very exotic. But eventually they kind of came down in price, became sort of a staple food. So here's a couple of interesting banana history points for you. The first banana split was made in 1907 in Wilmington, Ohio. Ernest R. Hazard at his restaurant created the banana split, and he hoped that it would attract college students to his shop. And I'm sure it did. Banana bread was invented in the 1930s. Love it. Especially if you use really ripe bananas, it's nice and sweet. More on that in just a second. But here's another interesting thing about bananas. It's not actually a fruit. I didn't know this, Jim. It's actually a berry. A banana is actually a berry because the seeds are inside the flesh instead of on the outside.
Right. Wow, who knew?
Who knew? And one other thing about bananas that I learned, and this was on the Yahoo UK website. One researcher said that ripe bananas, it's kind of like eating a Mars bar in yellow skin because they have so much sugar content. The riper they get, there's a lot of sugar in them. So if you eat them when they're more green, they're not as sweet, and they're actually a lot less sweet, but they have a lot more fiber content at that point. So I don't know where you stand on the banana continuum, whether you like them green or yellow, but he's still thinking about
it. I'll take them right. I like it. That's how you make really good banana bread, is they got to almost be brown on the outside of the banana peel. And then it doesn't matter because they're so ripe. You mash them up and they've got to be completely mashed. Makes the best banana bread. But I do get your point on the green banana. I'll eat them anyway, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go for it. And I'll tell you what, we are bananas for the Catholic faith here on Relevant Radio. Let's go to Gabby in Texas, who's on the line. Hello, Gabby.
Hello. I was wondering if there was a way I could convert to Catholicism. I know this is like probably not on your show or a question of your show. I'm new to this.
No. Hey, don't apologize. I'm glad you called in. So you're thinking about becoming Catholic, Gabby?
Yes, sir.
That's amazing. Now, what sort of prompted this? What got you thinking about this?
I was born and raised through the Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. I don't have very fond memories of the church. I don't really support it. I have a friend who has recommended our local church, St. Mary's in Mahia.
Okay.
And he's offered to even take me to church with him and ask my mother for permission, but my mom said no, and she's not very fond of the Catholic faith. Mm. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if there's any way I could do it within the safety of my own home.
Well, that's an interesting question. So Gabby, how old are you?
I'm 17 years old, sir.
You're 17. Okay. So obviously when you turn 18, I don't know, when you turn 18, you're obviously considered legally to be an adult there. It's a tricky situation when you're living in your parents' home and they maybe belong to a different faith group and you want to become Catholic, but you're kind of, you know, it's sort of a my home, my rules type of thing. What do you do? Because we have to obey God rather than men, as it says in Scripture. And this is one of the big things that happened after Easter. The apostles were told not to talk about Jesus. And they said, hey, well, we have to obey God, and even if we get punished for it. But it's a tricky situation when you're living in your parents' home because you want to respect them. They have God-given authority that's been given there. And so at the same time, though, I think that you're obviously of well beyond the age of reason and you're thinking about these questions. And I certainly encourage you to keep looking into it for sure. I'm a guy who spent a lot of time with Baptists myself. I grew up Catholic, I'm a cradle Catholic, was born Catholic, but I didn't know much about it when I was growing up. And one thing led to another. I left the church and I came back to faith in Jesus when I was in university through Baptist friends, actually, who answered a lot of my questions. But eventually I came to know that the Catholic Church was really the true church founded by Jesus. And so I re-entered the Catholic Church. I'm a revert to Catholicism. So I've been sort of on your side of the fence, and I understand sort of where you're coming from. And I think there's some great books that you can try to look at. I think it's important to try to read a lot about the Catholic Church and try to learn some things about it. I would recommend, there's a really interesting book here that's right in front of me. It's called Reasons to Believe by Scott Hahn, Dr. Scott Hahn. He's a convert to Catholicism who was a former Protestant minister. And that's a good book. He's written a lot of other good books as well about the faith. Patrick Madrid, who also, of course, hosts a show on Relevant Radio, he's written some great stuff as well. You can look up his books. And I think it's a really good thing to do to start reading the catechism maybe a little bit. And keep asking your mom. She might change her mind. She might say, yeah, you can go to Mass. I think it's good to try to attend a Mass if you can with your friend and just see what you think. And obviously, you won't be able to receive the Eucharist until you come into the church, but it's a really good thing to experience the liturgy, the divine liturgy of the Mass. And if you get a chance to maybe talk to a priest about it, maybe the parish priest, and just let them know, hey, I'm interested, but here's my situation. I'm living at home right now, and my mom's not in favor of this, but I'm beginning to think it's true. I hope that some of these suggestions might help a little bit.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Gabby. I'll certainly pray for you, and I'm going to ask all of our listeners to pray for you as well. Hey, do me a favor. Call back, okay? I want you to call back and let us know how things are going, okay? And I don't know if you're on social media, but you can also find me on the X app. At Cale Clark, you can tag me there, and I'll try to keep in touch as well. And if I think of anything else, any other beneficial things that would be good for you, I'll try to mention that. But keep praying, and try to develop a relationship with Mary as well. We've been talking about her during this hour. Nobody knows Jesus better than she did, and she will help to bring you close to her son. So, Gabby, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, anytime. That was Gabby in Texas. Well, that's really exciting. That's super exciting. And, you know, it takes a lot of guts, if you will, to sort of call into a Catholic radio program and say, hey, I've, I'm considering this, and can you help? And I'm so glad that you did, Gabby, because guess what? Millions of people are praying for you right now. So keep in touch. Call back and find me online, and we'll try to keep in touch as well. And if there's anything I can do for you, I will try to help to the best of my ability. Wow, that's so cool. So cool. Really appreciate all of you listening to The Cale Clark Show right here on Relevant Radio. And if you didn't get a chance to get through on the phone lines, we'll be back on again tomorrow. You can call in then. Stay tuned for Trending with Timory, followed by Father Rocky and the Family Rosary Across America. This is Cale Clark. Producer was Jim Schaefer. The gentleman who took your phone calls, Patrick Alog. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.